This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. No Happy Endings is the title of the third memoir by author Nora McInerney. In recent years, the Xavier grad has become a grief magnet, with countless individuals turning to her to discuss their own sad feelings. McInerney dealt with profound grief when she lost her husband, her father, and miscarried all in rapid succession. Now she's also the host of a podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking. And she's our guest today. Welcome, Nora.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So glad you would chat with us today. And the tragic deaths that you experienced of people close to your husband, your father, and losing a child. And I want to talk about those. But first, you managed to take this grief that you experienced and turn it into a variety of helpful enterprises. So when did you begin to view your life story and experiences as an opportunity to talk about grief with others?
You know, I don't know that I viewed it that way until somebody pointed out that that is what I was doing. I experienced all of those things that you said that happened over a 6-week period in my life. I was 31 years old. I had a toddler. I was in some pretty severe shock. I was not a very high functioning person, but I sure looked like it. And I think that anybody who's experiencing or has experienced profound grief knows what that feels like and what that looks like. The minute people see you doing normal people stuff, they think you're okay. They think you're okay because in the US, our average bereavement policy is 3 days. 3 days after you lose a spouse or a parent or a child. And that is obviously not enough time. But I was writing about my life before Aaron died, and I kept writing about it after he died. And I was not doing it necessarily to be helpful. I did not envision that I would have a strange little career based out of these things, but I got a lot of feedback. I got a lot of messages from people who were saying, oh, I know how this feels. This is how it felt for me. Thank you for putting this out into the world. That's where the idea from the podcast came from. I was very busy telling everybody how fine I was doing when they asked in real life, and I wish that I had just told people I am terrible. Thanks for asking.
And that was 2014. So in the fall and winter of 2014. So we've not even hit the 5-year mark on this when we lost your husband to a brain tumor and your father to cancer and lost your second pregnancy. I mean, these are things that anyone would struggle greatly with if just one of those things happened to them. But you and your husband co-authored his obituary that appeared in the paper, is that correct?
We did. We wrote his obituary together. It was written the night that he entered hospice, and I had recently written my father's obituary after he died, as is customary, and I struggled with it because how do you know what is the most important part of a person's life? How do you know what to put in what is essentially an advertisement for their death, a final recap of who they were. So I typed, Aaron talked, we collaborated, and we wrote this thing, and we looked at each other and said, there's no way they're going to publish this. But
well, you say that because advice, it was funny. It was funny.
It was a little funny. It was a little funny. I can recite the first part essentially from memory. Per mort, Aaron Joseph, age 35, died due to complications from a radioactive spider bite.
That led to years of crime fighting and a years-long battle with a nefarious criminal named Cancer, who has plagued our society for far too long. Civilians will recognize him best as Spider-Man and thank him for his many years of service protecting our city, is what you wrote. And then you listed among the survivors his first wife, Gwen Stefani, his current wife, Nora, you, and their son, Ralph, who will grow up to avenge his father's untimely death. So I wonder, was that your first foray into exploring humor as a way to cope with grief?
No, Aaron and my dad were the funniest people I have or ever will meet. And they were funny up until the very end. At my father's bedside, we had this really, really beautiful, like a real movie death moment, right? Where somebody says last words to you. And it was an ongoing joke in my family that I was the adopted one. It's not, children of the 80s, maybe this is funny to them, but, you know, I was the misfit of the family, and my dad I said to him, I'm so proud to be a McInerney. And he said, you're not a McInerney. And that was so, so funny to us. It was so funny to all of us. And Aaron, as he was dying, you know, I'm crying. And he says, I'm always going to be with you. So you need to stop picking your nose because it's so disgusting.
Wow.
And that's just how they were. That's just how they were all the time. And it made sense for Aaron's obituary to reflect exactly who he was when he was alive, which was himself, 100% himself at all times.
We're going to talk about your new book, but your first book was called It's Okay to Laugh, and it was described in part as a love letter to life and all its messy glory. It reads like a conversation with a close friend and leaves a trail of glitter in its wake. It was published in 2016 and marketed as, this is for everyone who wondered what exactly they're supposed to be doing with their one wild and precious life. So, Nora, when you wondered that, what you're supposed to be doing with your one wild and precious life, what do you think you found out?
I think I wondered that a lot more before Aaron got sick than I did after. And I don't want to pretend as if everything was somehow made clear by Aaron's death and by my dad's death and by all of these, you know, concurrent losses that I experienced. But before I met Aaron, you know, I went to Xavier University. I got great grades. I don't want to brag, but I definitely did. I graduated. I moved to New York. I did all of the things that I thought I was supposed to do. And I was always sure that I was doing it wrong. I was so worried that I was somehow going to make the wrong decision. And that kept me from making a lot of decisions. And Aaron was never like that. He just was so present and so alive. And being with him for those 4 years, he was sick for three of them. Those were hard years. And they were also the happiest of my life because we were so present with one another. We didn't know how much time we had together. We knew it probably wouldn't be 50 years, but we really didn't know. We were living our life between oncology appointments, and our life was really normal, and it was really rather unexciting for the most part. And I think that I have learned that I'm not here to try to avoid discomfort or avoid pain, that none of us are, and that what I am here to do is to just be present and to do my best.
One of your messages is, we don't move on from grief, we move forward with it. Tell us what that means.
I think that, and I mentioned earlier that most Americans, if you are lucky enough to have a full-time job with benefits, if you lose somebody close to you, you're lucky if you have 3 days of bereavement leave to pull together a funeral and, I guess, get over it. And then you have to join the rest of the world that has kept spinning, even though yours has absolutely stopped or completely exploded. There is this sense that when you experience a loss, when you're experiencing grief, it is an interruption to your life. And I believe that it is a part of life, just as much as the good things are. And we don't talk to people who are experiencing the best parts of life, right? We don't say, like, congratulations, you fell in love, now get over it. We understand that it's now a part of you, a part of who you are. And that what I think people don't see is that grief is more than just crying. And that grief is really a chronic condition. You will have it forever for the people that you loved. It won't always be the same. It looks, you mentioned I'm coming up on these 5-year anniversaries, and it feels a lot different at 5 years than it did after 5 days. But it's still a part of me. My life has moved forward. I've accomplished things. I am married again to a another man who's currently alive, knock on wood. I don't know. I haven't heard from him yet today. And
Jesus.
And we have a blended family. We have four kids. And I think some people would say, like, and have said to me, it's so good that you've moved on. And I haven't moved on. That sort of implies that the people that we love are just things that we leave in the past, when really the hard things in life and the wonderful things in life, they are all foundational. They all shape us.
Your husband's name is Matthew, and I do hope you hear from him today at some point.
I do too. He's traveling.
Okay. So, well, you told Vogue magazine about feeling shame at first when you realized you were falling in love with someone else. Can you talk about that process that you had to go through in that period?
Yeah, I think people use moving on as it's something that we want people to do, right? Don't be sad forever. Don't be, you know, don't get hung up on this. We want you to move on. We don't want it to be too soon. And this is all, I think, this is all representative of the fact that we don't have a lot of visibility into what grief is or what it means. Does it mean just making your life a museum to the person that you lost? I don't think so, but I did think so at the time. I thought that I was a widow now, and so I should be, I guess, sad all the time, but not so sad that people don't want to hang out with me. And I did fear that people, knowing that I was seeing Matthew and that I was falling in love with Matthew, would further this idea that I was now completely okay, that this loss was, that Aaron's death, the death of my husband, the father of my first child, was over. Like, it didn't matter anymore. And I didn't want that. I want people to know that Aaron does matter to me currently, that Matthew is not a replacement for him. He's this sort of addition. Like, your heart is so much bigger than you think it is until it has to be.
And now you have this new book, No Happy Endings, it's called. It doesn't sound particularly optimistic, Nora.
I know. You kind of line up all my books and you're like, is this woman okay? is this a series of cries for help?
Well, it's described as a book for people who know life isn't always happy, but it isn't in the end. There will be unimaginable joy and incomprehensible tragedy. So, I mean, that is brutally honest. So, mm-hmm. I wonder, this is your third book. So, what was new for you as a writer exploring this subject as you put this one together?
This is the story of life continuing. I think everybody is raised to love a happy ending because it's neat and tidy. And personally, I don't think that you could invent a happier ending than widowed woman meets divorced man, and they blend families and have a child, and they live in the suburbs and drive a minivan. That's pretty neat and tidy. But I also know, and I want our children to know, that it is not a requirement of us, that our happiness does not require us to not acknowledge the fact that our family was built from broken places, that our family exists because two other families no longer exist in the format in which they did. I want our kids to know that life is going to be hard again, and it will also be happy again, that happiness is not a final destination. It is as occasional as tragedy is, and that it is all just a part of life.
How do you talk to somebody who is experiencing grief? And I guess I don't mean you, since you've kind of become an expert in this area, but you've explored topics about dealing with one's own grief. But when someone is sad because they've lost someone, how should somebody approach that other than just, I'm sorry? What does that person want to hear?
I think that it's so different for everybody, obviously. But, you know, the Jewish tradition has this beautiful tradition called Shiva, and it's sitting in quiet for 7 days, and you can come and visit the grieving, the wife, the children, the partner, and you just shut your mouth and you let them lead the conversation. If they talk about the weather, they talk about the weather. If they talk about their person, they talk about their person. And I think that that is such a good place to start, is with quiet, is with letting the person at the center of this experience drive, and not trying to fill it with a platitude, not trying to distract them from the loss everybody has been at a wake or a funeral or something, where there's just one person there who's so uncomfortable with the uncomfortable that they can't stop talking. And you just want to look at them and say, just please stop moving your mouth and making sounds come out. I think if you are tangential, I don't know how to say this word, it's to this loss, you might not have to say anything other than I'm sorry. And the act of showing up is so powerful. I think to my father's funeral and looking out after we were, you know, the processional out of this church and looking around and seeing people I hadn't seen since grade school show up just to acknowledge that I'd lost my dad. I didn't even speak to them, but they were there. And that means a lot to people. And I like the opportunity to be able to talk about my person without somebody interrupting and saying, oh gosh, oh, that's so sad. Nobody wants your pity. Nobody wants to be a sad story. Nobody wants their beloved dead person reduced to just a sad story and a sympathy card. So the closer you are to the center of that loss, remember that this is a long-term condition that your friend, your family member is dealing with, and that it is okay to say, I don't really know how to talk about this. It's okay to say, hey, your person crossed my mind today, and you know, I don't know if you want to hear this, but I just want you to know I thought about them. I get emails sometimes from some of Aaron's old coworkers with anecdotes about him that I would have never heard. And it's like getting a present. And sometimes it makes me cry and sometimes it makes me laugh, but I'm always so glad that I just got to remember that he's a person.
Nora McInerney is the author of the new book, No Happy Endings, and the host of the podcast, Terrible. Thanks for asking. Nora, thanks so much for sharing some time with us today.
Thank you so much. Sorry I didn't know how headphones worked.
Oh, that's okay. We'll all learn together someday. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks.